Chapter 33. Dreaming of a Cozy Nest. In April or May of 1970, my partner Charlie and I moved into a small terrace house in Yonge Street, Annandale, an inner city suburb of Sydney. I'd bought the terrace with the proceeds of a compulsory savings account set up by my father to curtail my spendthrift ways. The $1,000 lump sum enabled us to move on to the next, more grown-up phase of our lives. As our relationship was newish, it'd be interesting to see how we'd cope with the stress, the inconvenience, and super tight finances that always went hand in hand with renovating. Even though we were young, strong, and optimistic, only time would tell if the relationship could withstand the physical, emotional, and financial rigors we were yet to face. Before launching into a selection of amusing renovating anecdotes, best I describe the location. Yonge Street was a widish street by inner city standards, with concrete footpaths flanking a motley collection of brick and weatherboard dwellings, many in need of repair. Our narrow, single-story, brick terrace was situated about a block and a half from Parramatta Road, the busy main road connecting the cities of Sydney and Parramatta to the west. The terrace had a corrugated iron roof and a bullnose front veranda, with panels of decorative cast iron facing the street. The house layout was as follows. From the front gate, a number of brick steps up to the veranda, with one more to the front door that opened into the living room, with a modest fireplace. Then a short walk along a narrow hallway with a bedroom off to the left, and into the kitchen, with a step up to the second bedroom. The bathroom and laundry were accessed along an uncovered external passageway that led out to the backyard, with the outdoor loo by the back boundary, and finally the back lane. The renovators. Charlie. A practical fella who had electrical wiring experience. And Morley. With no renovating experience other than hanging some vinyl wallpaper in a bathroom some months earlier. In those halcyon days of full employment, we both had full-time jobs. Now, on to the more memorable experiences. Experience number one. Shortly after moving in, we realized we needed to improve the underfloor ventilation, as the house was a little damp. This would be our first major expense. We paid a fella a mozza to install ventilators front and back. After the fact, we realized we could have done it ourselves by removing a single brick and inserting a brick-sized ventilator in its place. So simple. Installing the ventilators created a serious hole in our meager renovating budget. But the experience provided an important lesson, thankfully learned early. That is, to do the research before having a crack ourselves. Experience number two. One Saturday morning, Charlie, in an attempt to locate the mains water inlet in the tiny front garden, accidentally put a pick through the rusted galvanized water pipe. Until the water was turned off, we had the Geneva fountain in the front yard. As Charlie had to leave for work, I was left holding the baby, so to speak. Now alone and very worried, I wondered what to do. Before we had home ownership responsibilities, Charlie's favorite watering hole was the Forth and Clyde Hotel, in nearby Balmain. When I'd recovered my wits, and a normal heartbeat, I decided the best place to find a plumber was at the pub. If worst came to worst, I'd jump up on the bar and ask, "Is there a plumber in the house?" And there was. He came, assessed the situation, and reappeared the next day, Sunday, with what was needed to fix the problem. And by late afternoon, the terrace had a new copper water line from front to back. Hallelujah. Experience number three. The front room had a 3.2 meter high lath and plaster ceiling in need of repair. It was covered with a tracery of cracks and undulations. Too much for a couple of novice renovators like us to handle. Charlie knew a ceiling repair fella who arrived to quote on the job early one Saturday morning, just after Charlie had left for work. Hearing a knock on the front door, I leapt out of bed, threw on my knee-length fur coat and hurried to open the door. The fella came in, assessed the ceiling, and quoted, after which he began pestering me to take off my coat, correctly guessing I'd nothing on underneath. Written quote in hand, I managed to get him out the front door. And afterwards, extremely annoyed by his audacity, I breathed a sigh of relief. When he returned to repair the ceiling, I left Charlie to deal with him. Experience number 4. In the room reshuffle, the front room became the office cum sewing room, the kitchen became the living room, and the laundry became the kitchen. We removed the laundry copper in the corner of the space, and planned to replace it with a 4-burner gas stove. The existing brick chimney would become the stove extractor vent, taking cooking smells up and out into the Annandale air. There was only one more brick to be removed before the stove install, so late one evening I decided to remove it. When it came away, I felt an unexpected rush of cold air on my face. I was shocked because I'd assumed it was a double brick wall. But no. Wrong. It was single brick, and I was through to my neighbor's bathroom. Oh dear. Next morning, when he discovered the hole, he was understandably cross. I quickly halved the brick size before replacing it, after which harmonious neighborly relations were restored, and the new stove could be installed. Experience number 5. We were coming to the end of the renovation, with one outstanding job to complete: the front fence. Very soon after moving in, I began to chip off the render on the front of the house, hoping against hope that the bricks beneath would be sandstocks, the fashionable convict-made bricks used in and around Sydney before 1840. Instead, my chipping revealed multicolored common bricks, a sign that this row of terraces was much younger, probably built around 1890. But the damage was done. I had to continue chipping because the cost of re-rendering was way beyond our budget. As a result, I decided to use matching recycled commons for the fence. Driving home from work one day, I noticed a demolition site. I stopped and asked the fellow if he'd clean commons for sale. I needed 1,000, and the deal was quickly done. The additional cost of having the bricks delivered was out of the question, and, as Charlie wasn't available, I got the gig using Charlie's beat-up flatbed Fiat truck. I did 2 trips, 500 bricks per trip. I loaded them, drove the truck slowly back to Yonge Street, where I unloaded and neatly stacked each one on the footpath, ready for the bricklayer. By day's end, I was absolutely buggered. The bricklayer came early the next day, and by day's end we had a tall front fence to match the house, with embedded letterbox, and Victorian cast iron front gate. What a stylish transformation. The Yonge Street renovation dragged on for 18 months, and we desperately needed a break from the dust, the mess, the never-ending list of jobs, and the constant drain of it all on our finances. The last major expense was installing the wall-to-wall carpet. That done, we congratulated ourselves for crossing the finishing line, and went out to dinner to celebrate, before moving on to other things. On reflection. Annandale. When Charlie and I moved to Annandale in 1970, it was a working-class suburb. The surrounding houses were either rented or owned by people, many of whom were factory workers. We represented the new wave of young baby boomers who moved in, to begin gentrifying this part of Sydney's inner west. Yonge Street. As the house was so narrow, I have strong memories of feeling squished in. Life within its walls could be likened to living in a series of connected railway carriages, each carriage with a different purpose. This was an unnerving experience, and one I've avoided repeating in the houses I've purchased since. Renovations? In retrospect, our renovations were terrible. A mishmash of color and texture. The decor of each room differed, with wallpaper hung over lining paper to help disguise the numerous lumps and bumps in the walls, the result of over 80 years of occupation. The floor treatments were equally diverse. The 3 rooms in the hall at the front of the house were carpeted. The dining room had a new polished cypress pine floor. The kitchen had square brown quarry tiles, and the tiny bathroom had posh marble tiles. At the time, Charlie and I were very proud of our work, and really enjoyed living together in the little house whilst our relationship lasted. Facts: Annandale is an inner western suburb of Sydney, about 5 kilometres from the city centre. Major George Johnston, who arrived with the First Fleet in 1788, held the original 40-hectare land grant. He farmed the area and later sold it on to John Young, for whom Young Street was named. Young was a businessman, architect and mayor, who began subdividing the land in earnest. A cluster of Grand Witches' houses, for which Annandale is famous, were built at the Roselle Bay end of Johnson Street, to house Sydney's elite. Away from the bay, the houses ranged from 2 and 3 stories down to single-story workers' cottages, like mine. They were mostly built of brick and often rendered with stucco to look like sandstone. Most were constructed in the filigree style, using decorative cast iron ornaments on balconies and verandas, sometimes depicting native Australian flora.